Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Who Cares Wins. It's Monday. It's the 27th of January. Where did that month go? Angela will soon be saying the C word again. But moving swiftly onwards, Angela is in Australia today. And so I have a special guest filling her seat, lovely Hilda Marie Smith. Hello, Hilda.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
And for listeners who haven't heard from you before, can you give us a little bit about your background?
Yep. I used to have a company called Catering for Kent, which now is no longer. However, I work for myself where I offer one-to-one and bespoke catering cooking classes, either for children on healthy eating and where food comes from and making things from scratch, or for families or individuals that perhaps has an illness or something. They just want to concentrate on healthy eating, sort of superfoods, that kind of stuff.
Excellent. So that's a very hot topic at the moment, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
So do you go to them or do they come to you?
It could be whatever suits them.
Right.
So I can either go to them or they can come to me.
Excellent.
So either way is absolutely fine.
And you've been an employer in the past.
I have, so that's going
to be very helpful with today's topic.
Yeah.
Because we have a wonderful guest in the studio today, Kim Boggins. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Jan.
And Kim's from KB Occupational Health and Safety Services.
That's correct.
Okay, so that's your business, and we'll be talking a little bit about that in a moment.
Yes.
But the reason you're here today is to tell us about the new occupational health initiative that the government are launching.
Yes, that's correct. Is the government over the past few years have actually looked at how they can help employers understand about occupational health for their employees. Occupational health is quite a well-known discipline, but very few people have access to it, especially for small providers. So what the government has tried to do is try to set up a system whereby occupational health advice and services are available to everybody. And this is what I'll talk to you about today.
Right. So we've got two topics to quiz you about then. You, yourself and your business, that's number one, and then the occupational health scheme.
That would be
two.
Great.
Okay. And of course, Angela hasn't left us totally, folks. She's been busy making recordings as she goes on her travels, and throughout today's show and in future weeks, we'll be playing you snippets from her recordings. So they'll be coming up as we go through the show. As always, if you have any questions for either Hilda Marie or for Kim on the subject today, please do tweet us. At Cares Wins is our Twitter handle. We're also on Facebook, Who Cares Wins Radio Show, and our email account. It'll come back to me. I do know it, honest folks. But anyway, we're here waiting to hear from you if you've got any questions. So we'll start off putting Kim in the hot seat.
Thank you very much.
Kim, can we take you back to, you've completed your schooling.
Yes.
You're entering the big wild world.
Yes.
Career at your fingertips. How did you start your career?
Well, I didn't start out in nursing. I thought I would actually like to be a teacher to start with, so I trained as a teacher.
Right.
And then shortly after that, I changed my mind and decided that I would like to go into nursing.
Uh-huh.
So then I did my nursing qualification. So I'm a registered general nurse.
Right. Did you start in hospitals?
Well, what I did is I just did normal general nursing, which is usually what most people do.
Okay.
And then I did that for a few years. I worked in intensive care. I worked in general medicine.
Right.
And then I decided that when I'd had my daughter, I maybe wanted to work hours that weren't quite so difficult to manage with the family.
Sure.
So then I thought, oh, well, why don't I resurrect my teaching again? And I came across a job which was actually to teach in the prison service at Young Offenders Institute.
Oh, it's challenging.
Well, it was a very interesting job in the fact that when I went thinking I was going to be a teacher, but they were more interested in the fact that I was a nurse.
Right.
So they asked me whether or not I would actually teach health education, which I was quite happy to do because obviously I was a teacher and I'd done my nursing.
Sure.
But then they said to me, well, we really want to be able to do something very different. And they asked me to see whether or not I could put a course together on sex education.
Very challenging.
Obviously, yes. As you can imagine, it was all guys under the age of 18 who were obviously very boisterous, some with quite difficult, challenging behaviour. And me, I was probably in my early 20s then, trying to decide about sex education.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to keep it fairly light. And I'll just give you a little story.
Oh, good.
As to the sorts of things that came up. We obviously were talking about contraception.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all the different methods of contraception that obviously are available to people. And one of the young lads actually said to me quite seriously, Is it possible to use cling film instead of a condom?
Ooh.
Oh, my goodness me.
And my answer to him was, well, it depends on whether you've had your sandwiches in this cling film before you actually use it. But obviously, I did say to him that probably that wasn't such a good idea. No.
Well, no question's a silly question.
No, but no. So obviously from that point, he wasn't going to use it anymore.
Yeah.
I stayed in prison education for quite some while. And then I decided that actually I would like to go back into some form of nursing role. Right. But once again, to actually not be working within a hospital. And an opportunity came up within the Atomic Energy Authority for an occupational health nurse. So I was very lucky to get that job. And then they trained me in the additional qualification of actually occupational health, which is a discipline which is specific to the workplace.
Right.
And that's where I am today, having worked in occupational health now for 20 or so years, having worked for my own company for 14 years.
Right. Now, we've got the term occupational health, which mm-hmm. some of our listeners will have heard. And for some people, it might be tripping up the other one of occupational therapy.
Yes, that's right.
So if we can start off with what is occupational health? And then we'll try and compare the two.
The difference, yeah, that's fine. No, you're absolutely right. A lot of people will often say to me about being an occupational therapist, and I have to give them the difference. But occupational health is about the health of people at work and their health, how it affects their work. An example of workplace health would be one thing that I deal with a lot is taking hearing tests for people so that we can see whether or not being exposed to noise has affected their hearing.
Right.
So that's specifically a health risk that they would actually come into contact with being at work. The other side of the job is looking at any health issues that people currently have that could affect their ability to carry out their normal job.
Right.
An example of that might be somebody who has a sports injury and hurts their back, mm-hmm. and they're a bricklayer, so trying to do their normal job would not be very easy whilst they're waiting for their back issue to sort itself out.
Right.
So I can get involved with both of those issues, but obviously dealing with them in a very different way.
And so with your occupational health hat, but your nursing hat, does that mean you would treat them or that you would signpost them?
No, I don't provide any treatment.
Right.
My job is to actually advise people as to how to look after their employees.
Gotcha.
And then signpost them. For instance, with the guy, if he's hurt his back and I think he needs to be able to see a physiotherapist, mm-hmm. with the employer, I may suggest to get him back to work quickly. We might refer him to a physiotherapist who could actually aid his recovery.
Right. And whilst you're not an occupational therapist, can you quickly explain for
yes,
listeners?
Yes, yeah, and I'm sure a lot of occupational therapists would like people to understand the difference as well. Occupational therapy is a completely different discipline.
Right.
And somebody who trains as an occupational therapist does that in isolation. They don't become a nurse, they train as an occupational therapist.
Right.
And occupational therapy is a very important job to help people come to terms with injuries that they may sustain and need to learn how to do certain things in their daily life in a different way. We are seeing in occupational health more occupational therapists because they can work alongside us.
Right.
In regards to rehabilitation, those sorts of things. So the disciplines can overlap, mm-hmm. but we actually train in different ways.
Right, so thank you for that. That's put a line on
good.
That. We won't refer
good.
To occupational therapy again unless it's pertinent to the conversation. So back to occupational health. You mentioned you obviously did your nursing training and then you trained occupational health-wise. Forgive me if you did mention, how long did it take you to do the occupational health side of things?
You can train as an occupational health nurse on top of being a nurse in lots of different ways.
Right.
The way that I did it was I worked as an occupational health nurse and trained at the same time. I went to Bristol University and actually did a course where I actually did that.
Right.
So I did my course over 2 years. You can actually go back to university and just do that course in a year.
Right.
But obviously you then have to get a job to be able to put that into practice.
Okay. And is it possible to be an occupational health practitioner without the nursing element?
This is another interesting question, because if you are a specialist occupational health practitioner like myself, mm-hmm. you have to have the specialist qualification.
Right.
However, there are a lot of nurses working in occupational health who are very experienced, who work as an occupational health nurse, but they can't call themselves a specialist unless
right.
they've actually got that qualification.
Right. So qualifications are things to look out for.
It's something that if you want to engage an occupational health practitioner and you want somebody who can work at a specific level, mm-hmm. then a specialist is one who can actually start making some decisions to help you,
right.
whereby an occupational health nurse may need to refer to a specialist to actually confirm
okay.
what they need to do.
Okay. And are you a member of a professional body?
Well, I'm a member of the RCN, which is the Royal College of Nursing, but I also belong to a specific occupational health profession called the Association of Occupational Health Nurse Practitioners,
right.
whereby everybody who actually is in occupational health can get together and actually sort of work together.
I bet that's got a nice acronym.
Yes,
we might have to add that to the quiz later on. So keep your ears peeled for that one, folks. Okay, so that's you in a nutshell, and no doubt we'll tap on some of those things as we go through
the
show.
Yes.
But as you explained earlier, your main reason for coming on today is really to give our listeners some public health information
yes.
for those that are in the workplace,
yes.
either as an employee or an employer.
Yes.
Because this new scheme sounds like it's going to really tick a few boxes for people.
I think it will. I think one of the things that the government has done over the last few years is actually looked at the benefits of people being in work. And it's been really well established through research that actually work is good for health. Mm-hmm. Those people who are unable to work very often get a lot of mental health problems. They become depressed. They're not actually socially interactive with people. So being in work is a very, very important factor in people's lives. And where people are unable to work through illness or disability, it's now been recognised that with the right support and advice to the employee and the employer, a lot of people could either return to work to their normal jobs or possibly work in another way, work with another employer. But the information that they need has not been very easily available up until now.
Right.
So the government has decided that it wanted to improve the access to occupational health advice and support. So from April this year, it will start to be introduced as a scheme whereby GPs, when they see people who are unwell and they're signing them off with a fit note to say that they're unfit for work, at the 4-week interval, they can now, or they will be from April 2014, be able to refer those patients to an occupational health service,
right.
which will then be able to start the process of providing advice to the employee, the GP and the employer.
Excellent. Well, we're going to go into that in a lot more detail in a moment, but we're going to have our first piece of music, very apt for the topic of employment and work today. It's Huey Lewis in the News with Working for a Living, followed by Angela, Part One.
Sundays pass on by, I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know damn well I won't. Working for a living, work. Working for a living, work. Working for a living, living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living. Cause I really need to work. But hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living, work. Working for a living. Working for a living, living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living. Working for a living, living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living. Working for a living, living
Channel Radio.
G'day Jan, how you doing? It's your roaming reporter from Down Under. That's probably a terrible accent. Yes, folks, it's me, Angela Briar Stevenson, from the far, 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 far away land. Yes, I am in Australia at the moment. I'm in Manly, and we have had a fantastic flight to get here. We flew with Emirates. I can highly recommend them. And for health and well-being, of course, being a first class, definitely. We were looked after. We had champagne, we had fruit, and I made sure I also dosed up on the water. So I kept hydrated, had a lovely sleep in my little PJs, and, of course, had a shower, as you do. 40,000 feet, I'm having a shower, drying my hair. Very bizarre, on a plane. But wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Arrived feeling very refreshed, awake, alert. Jet lag, don't know what that is. No problems. I have acclimatised instantly, straight away onto Sydney time, and we had a lovely day. We have been around Circular Quay, looked at the Harbour Bridge, done the walk around the Opera House, and just as you do down here, chill out, relax, have a beer, and a barbecue. We had a beef barbecue, investigating hire cars so we can have a look around this wonderful, wonderful place, heading down, depending on the bushfires, that may cause us to detour slightly. But we're here, and of course we had Australia Day, celebrations, fireworks, barbies, chilling out with friends and family. Absolutely fantastic, great celebrations. So all in all, the health and well-being is definitely intact.
So I'm not at all jealous about Angela and her first-class Emirates flights and all that warm weather she's having, because we're in the studio and we're having a great afternoon with Hilda Marie Smith stepping in for Angela, silently twittering away and tweeting, whatever the word is.
I'm imagining being on that in front of the barbecue, actually. You've lost me
having
about 3 seconds ago. Yeah. Absolutely.
And also with us today is Kim Boggins from KB Occupational Health and Safety Services.
Hello again. Well, we have got some sunshine. I can see it coming through the curtains. It might not be warm, but it's
got the sunshine. No, I think the temperature might not match the idea of the sun.
Yes.
So we're here today and we're talking about the government-funded initiative, Health and Work Assessment and Advisory Service. There's an acronym in there as well, HWAS, but it's not part of the quiz today. So just before the music break, Kim, you gave us in a nutshell what the service was. Is there a background to how it came about?
Yes, for a number of years, the government have funded a number of pilot studies looking at different ways of supporting people to, like I say, get back to work or remain in work. And now all of those pilot studies have actually been collated. They've looked at what were the best things that actually worked to help people get back to work. And as one would have expected, providing direct advice very quickly to people is probably the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. But obviously making sure that employers understand that even if somebody is not 100% fit, with the right support in place, they can return to work and actually get better quicker by the fact that they are actually back in work.
Sure.
So the government decided that the best way to provide the service to everybody was through the GPs.
Right.
Although some people do have access to occupational health in their own companies, everybody will be able to use this service once the GP has actually triggered it.
Right.
So it will be equally applied once everybody is in place, which I think the anticipation is that by April 2015, it will be released out across the whole country.
Right, because probably at the moment, if one works for a large company, occupational health services are part of the package.
It can be, but these days a lot of even larger companies are really looking at how much service they can actually provide.
Right.
So anything in addition to any in-house services, if as long as everybody's working together and communicating together, mm-hmm. then that is going to be a bonus. But the real people who will benefit from this are those people who work in small, medium-sized businesses where occupational health access is just not available to them.
They probably really don't have HR
Sometimes, no, you're right. I have a lot of companies where I deal with a health and safety person because there isn't any HR. Mm-hmm. So whoever is actually talking to the employer or the employee will be able to know that they can provide that information back to the employer, whoever they are, in a way that's easily understood and hopefully is very practical.
Okay. And what sort of things is it going to provide?
There looks like there's going to be two ways that the employees will be able to be supported. The first one is through telephone support. And although some people may say, oh, what can you actually do on the telephone? I provide a lot of my advice through telephone. Yeah. And as long as you're asking the right questions and you feel that you've got the right information and the person at the other end of the phone feels confident that you understand what you're talking about, it can be a very, very effective way of providing advice. Mm-hmm. Occupational health is not always about examining people. It's about looking at the information that's available from all the different sources, the GP, the employer, the employee, anybody else who may be a provided service like a physiotherapist, and then putting all of that information together to come up with a plan that's about returning that person to work, not about confirming that are they getting the right treatment, although that may be a question, but at the end of the day, it's about putting a plan together that supports the employee back to work.
Okay. So that's part one, that's the phone service.
So if somebody then has a telephone consultation and the assessor feels that they really do need a face-to-face, mm-hmm. and sometimes this could be because there is a very physical disability that does need to be assessed in a much more practical way, then it will be arranged for that person to be given a face-to-face assessment.
Right.
At the moment, the providers who are going to be looking at delivering this service haven't been confirmed, but it may well be that one company will provide the telephone support and one company will provide the face-to-face.
Right.
But as you can imagine, as a countrywide service, it's going to take quite a lot of logistical planning to make sure it's consistent and everybody who's providing the service is competent to do that.
Now, right in saying that face-to-face assessment, that's got nothing to do with the benefits side of things.
No, definitely not.
And other companies
that
have got
involved. This is nothing to do with benefits. This is purely about providing occupational health advice to get an employee back to work who is currently off sick.
Right.
So it's not about the capability assessment process at all.
But I suppose, in theory, it could be possible that somebody's been through that capability assessment process, is in work or back at work, and then through one reason or another goes sick and then has to have an occupational health assessment.
Yes.
There's no need to think, oh my God, my benefits are risk or anything like that.
Because obviously if somebody is in work, then one would assume that they are getting paid. Mm-hmm. But one of the other reasons as well for the government to introduce this service is to reduce the requirement for people to be on benefits because they are at work.
Right.
Obviously the government's not doing this just because it's a good thing to do. They're also looking at the economics of people being in work. Obviously people pay their taxes, they pay their national insurance, so everybody could potentially be better off by somebody being in work from the benefits point of view.
Certainly.
But at the end of the day, if somebody is assessed by this service and they're not deemed to be fit to work, then that still needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And at least you've got a starting point to actually have that conversation with everybody about how to support that person.
And you mentioned earlier about sort of the time frame that somebody's off sick for, and there's been an awful lot of studies, haven't they, that if somebody's off for more than 4 weeks at a time, it's harder.
Harder to get somebody back to work. Most companies will have a sickness absence policy, which will mean that the employee keeps in touch with work, which is always good. But if somebody is going to be off work for more than 4 weeks, that's the trigger now for the GPs to make the referral into this occupational health service.
Yeah.
Once somebody's actually been referred into that service, I would imagine that the anticipation is that a plan to return them to work, hopefully within another 2 to 4 weeks, is then available. If they're not going to be able to return to work, then you need to make sure that the employer understands how long they're likely to be off, mm-hmm. so that from a practical point of view, that can be covered whilst that person's not at work.
Right. And I've been looking through literature ahead of today, doing my homework.
Good.
And one of the things I think will be attractive to an awful lot of companies is the fact there's some tax relief possible.
Yes. Yeah. Originally, it was thought that if this new service suggests that somebody needs some practical therapy for counselling or maybe for the physiotherapy, if the employer actually paid for that, it wouldn't actually be a taxable benefit, which is one of the things that very often these days is that if you get any of these sorts of benefits, the employer and the employee could end up being paying tax on that. Mm-hmm. It's now been agreed as well, which is good for me, that that will also apply to any in-house occupational health service requirement. If somebody's recommending that it's required to get that person back to work or remain in work, up to £500, that will no longer be a taxable benefit, right. So people don't have to pay the tax. And I presume that employers will be advised of this as it starts to come in, because very often if somebody is being told you can actually provide, say, 2 or 3 sessions of physiotherapy and it maybe cost a couple of £100, an employer will immediately be worried about how that will impact on as a taxable benefit for that employee. Yeah. But that should be excluded, and I presume that the government will be advising everybody about that.
Right. And in terms of the recommendations that the occupational health practitioner can make in that process, might it be a referral to another service, such as an ergonomist or a specialist disability assessor?
That's one of the assumptions, that if somebody does need to be fast-tracked into a service so that they can actually recover more quickly, it will be set up so that they can do that. We won't really know as to how well it will work until it starts being sort of promoted.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the fast track service is definitely one of the things that they're hoping will actually happen. And with the pilot studies, that was one of the things that they found, is that they could fast track people into physiotherapy or counselling. Mm-hmm. And it really did speed people's recovery up rather than being on the waiting list. Absolutely. And sometimes people are on waiting lists for all sorts of things, and that's the only thing that's holding them up from returning to work.
Yeah.
And it could be a very simple answer to being able to get people back to work, and they access the services that they need.
Because if you're off for 4 weeks and you get triggered into the system, and but you might have to wait 12 weeks for an appointment, that's 16 weeks off work
that's
before
16
you
weeks.
Even get treatment.
That's right. But one of the things that the Occupational Health Service will hopefully be able to do is find things that people can do. So even if they are waiting for some treatment, it may be that they can do some aspects of their job.
Right.
But an employer sometimes needs to understand if that person can do that and not put everybody else or themselves at risk because they are waiting on some treatment.
So it's assessing light duties.
Yeah, it's giving
or
confidence to people
delegated.
About what you can do rather than always concentrating on what you can't do.
Sounds a really positive way forward, doesn't it?
It is. And in occupational health, we obviously always know these things, but now we need everybody else to know them.
Right. And I was confusing myself with all my research because I came across the NHS at Work, Health at Work scheme.
Yeah.
And you were telling me that actually there are 3 elements, but they all come under the same umbrella.
They do. The information that the NHS at Work system is very similar to what is currently available as a service for small, medium-sized businesses, which is an advice line for health at work. The NHS have one, the small, medium-sized businesses have one, but the construction industry have one as well. And you would find that information under the Constructing Better Health scheme, where it's an advice line, there's a chat system, you can ask questions online, and you can actually explore their knowledge base. All of the information that's available on those 3 websites is all very similar, but in some respects it's geared to the type of employees that might be using it.
Gotcha.
So, for instance, with the construction industry, it will be very much around construction worker employers. Mm-hmm. With the NHS, it's about employees in the NHS, in the healthcare system. So there are some very slight differences, but broadly speaking, it follows the same type of plan.
Right. Excellent. Well, I think it's time for another piece of music. And this one is actually one that you use within your work sometimes.
So, sometimes when I do training, yes, it's one that I actually like to use. It's very interesting.
So it's Dire Straits and Industrial Disease, followed by Angela Part 2.
lights are flashing down the quality control. Somebody threw a spanner, they threw it in the hole. There's rumors in the Logan Bay and anger in the town. Somebody blew the whistle and the walls came down. There's a meeting in the boardroom, they're trying to trace the smell. There's a leaking in the washroom, there's a sneaking personnel. Somewhere in the corridor, someone was heard to sneeze. Goodness me, could this be industrial disease? Caretaker was crucified and sleeping in his bed. It's him they blame the most. Watchdog or rabies, the foreman got a fillet. Everyone concerned about industrial disease. There's panic on the switchboard, tongues and knots. Some come out in sympathy, some come out in spots. Some blame the management, some the employees. Everybody knows it's the industrial disease. Parkinson declared, I'm not surprised to see you here. You've got smoker's cough from smoking, brewer's droop from drinking beer. I don't know how you came to get the Betty Davis knees, but worst of all, young man, you've got a lung-field disease. He wrote me a prescription, he said, you are depressed. I'm glad you came to see me to get this off your chest. Come back and see me later. Next patient, please. Send me another victim on industrial disease.
Channel Radio.
Waking up to blue skies. Sorry, London. Sorry, England. You probably don't want to hear this, do you? Blue skies, the breeze swaying in the frangipani trees, and can hear in the background the little tweet of birds. Oh, it is just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Waking up to all different types of birds singing. Haven't actually seen any of them yet, but I'm sure there's some kookaburras somewhere. And if I can get a photo, I will post it on our Facebook page for you all, lovely listeners. Of course, if you are listening in from Australia or New Zealand, do get in touch, because if we can meet for a coffee, that would be great. And perhaps we can have a chat about anything to do with health and well-being. And, of course, this is the place, health and well-being. Everyone is out running, rollerblading, surfing, swimming. This is the place. So, Jan, watch out. When I come back, I'm going to probably be half the size of the woman I am. Well, that's my plan anyway.
Half the size and twice the energy. That's a scary thought. So welcome back to Who Cares Wins on Monday, the 27th of January. And we've had a couple of tweets. Adrian of AK Pet Services is listening live. Hello, Adrian. And he'll be on the show in a couple of weeks' time. So we look forward to having him. All your pet services, your pet health and well-being needs should be met by that show. And while we were chatting in the studio, music playing, Hilda Marie was saying about some of her experiences of being a small business owner and how occupational health could have helped. But
yeah.
It's knowing where to turn. So this service might be pretty good for you in the future.
Absolutely. I feel that on occasions it was myself and one or two other people in the office or in the kitchen, mm-hmm. busy cooking. In particular, our one chef had back problems and he was constantly in pain. So you'd think, how do you help him? What do you do? And is there anything to make it better? You know, that kind of thing. And as a person that's obviously not an expert,
sure.
you don't know who to ask. We don't have a health and safety person. We don't have an HR department who's going to look after all that kind of stuff.
Or a bucket of bunny in the corner.
Exactly.
So I suppose this new service would be very useful to you. Mm-hmm. But also the advice line that I just spoke about would have been absolutely ideal, because as an employer, you can actually call somebody and talk to them about the problem.
Oh, brilliant.
And they can then actually provide you with all the advice. But for everybody who's never used the NHS Choices website, I would very, very strongly suggest that you have a look at it. There is a whole section on work health, right. And there is an excellent section on back pain. I'm okay. Sure you've probably
so
seen
what
it.
Is the website myself, yeah.
The actual website that anybody can go to for any problems to do with their health is called NHS Choices.
Okay.
You can just Google that. But if you want to look for something very specific, there is an A to Z. And if the one that you've just spoken about with back pain, the actual employee themselves probably doesn't understand how best to look after themselves. Mm. And in the old days, you go and see the doctor and he would actually say to you, go to bed and rest, which obviously mm-hmm. is not the thing to do now. What they should be saying now is keep as active as possible, take as much painkillers as you need, as recommended, you know, for every 4 hours to remain pain-free. But even more importantly at the moment, we recognise that we need to make sure that people understand how to keep their backs fit. And if you go to the NHS Choices website, there's a whole selection of videos about doing the exercises. Mm-hmm. And I've done this time and time again with a number of employees that I've worked with, and they've really found that the exercises along with the medication and keeping active helps to relieve their discomfort, because their back is actually becoming fit and the spasm is obviously reduced. So your chef, he's really much better off at work mm-hmm. because he's keeping active, but he may need to do things slightly differently. So if he's standing for long periods of time in one place, he needs to move around so that he reduces the stress on his lower back. If he's going to be doing any bending and twisting, he needs to ensure that he's doing it in a way that's comfortable and doesn't overstretch his back. Or he may need to actually talk to you about particular types of equipment that would actually make life a lot easier in regards to lifting of loads. Or if he's doing a lot of twisting because of the way that the kitchen is arranged, you may need to just look at, well, can we reduce some of the things that require the twisting activities?
Yeah.
But all of those bits of information are available. It's just a case of knowing where to look and talking to the right people. So talking to the advice line so that they can tell you what information that you need.
Could you remind me of the telephone number for the advice line?
The actual Health at Work advice line is 0800 077 8844.
So anybody could phone that.
Anybody can phone that. And there's a website which will give you access to the knowledge base. Mm-hmm. You can pose a question. You can just do chat online. There is a blog as well, which is very interesting, that will look at different aspects of what's current in regards to health at work. But if you want general information about your health and how to look after yourself, then the NHS Choices website is also a very good place to have a look.
It's an excellent website. And I often, when I'm going to see a client, I will find their condition,
yes,
print off the pages,
absolutely,
hand it to them.
Yes.
And it's amazing how many times they say, this is the first time I've actually looked into my condition above and beyond my GP saying, oh, you've got back pain.
Yeah.
Go home and rest.
That's right. That's right.
And it's brilliantly split down. It has the diagnosis at the front,
yes,
the description of,
yes,
the condition, how it's diagnosed, any treatment plans that might be,
yes,
on offer, and how to self-treat.
That's right.
As well as the videos and things. So it's a brilliant,
yeah,
resource.
And I'm sure that the new Health at Work service will be looking at, mm-hmm, signposting people to this information, because it's all the information you know is from a trusted source, and it will also help you, or it does help me, to tell employers about somebody's condition if they've given me consent, because obviously I have to deal with medical confidential information.
Yeah.
But if an employer already knows somebody's diagnosis, understanding a little bit more about the impact that it has on them on a day-to-day basis is really important for them to understand why you might give certain advice.
Yeah.
Somebody with back pain who is sitting for long periods, I will always tell them, and you know this as well, Jan,
sure,
is that getting up and down frequently is really important.
Yeah.
But if an employer sees somebody bobbing up and down all the time and walking away, they think, well, why are they not at their desk doing their job?
Yes.
But if they understand why you've given that advice, then they will obviously support that for the employee during that particular,
yes,
time.
Because you're looking for productivity across, mm, the day, and sometimes getting up, moving around and taking a break is far more effective on your overall productivity, mm,
than staying in one place
and being in pain,
yeah, slowing down, possibly making mistakes and having to redo things.
That's right.
And so it's part of the education process. And
this is all general occupational health.
Yeah.
And none of it is very complicated. It's just about giving people the opportunity to, one, understand their own condition and manage and take responsibility for that, but also being able to get employers to understand how they can assist their employees to remain in work, right, or if they aren't able to work, to really be some more supportive as to, you know, when it is they're going to be coming back to work.
And just to reiterate then, we've got the free telephone service.
Yes.
If somebody is then referred to a face-to-face, that provision of service is also free to the employer.
It's all free.
It's, yeah, all free.
It's all free.
There's the potential for tax relief.
If it's recommended that somebody needs some treatment and the employer is going to pay for that, then it doesn't count as a taxable benefit. Yeah.
So that's three, win-win-win.
Yes.
Any other benefits that we haven't talked about for the employer, firstly?
I think for the employer, it means that doesn't matter how small you are, you will get equal access.
Right.
It's not about how big your company is or how much you can pay. It's about the access for the employee and the employer.
That's getting individual. The help, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah. And also, if employers are getting information about occupational health conditions, they will gain knowledge as well. So when somebody else maybe has a similar problem, they already have some information about maybe how they themselves can actually help sort that problem out. So everybody will be continually educated because they'll be given more and more information about those types of health problems. The scheme is primarily available for all conditions, but some information I've read today said that two of the core things that they feel that they will really get actively involved with is back pain and mental health problems.
Oh, brilliant.
And for anybody who knows about sickness absence, you know that those are the two things that actually cause the highest levels of sickness absence. So if we can actually really help people to manage and deal with those things in the workplace, mental health and back problems, that could make a really big difference from a, like you say, from a productivity point of view and from a business point of view in regards to the cost of sickness absence.
And they're often the most tricky for the employer to handle because they're both hidden in their own ways often.
They can be hidden, but with many mental health problems, sometimes people are a little bit afraid of being able to talk to somebody about mental health problems.
There's a stigma attached.
There still is a stigma, and people feel that will they make matters worse by talking to people. But very often what the employee wants is to actually have a conversation with somebody so that they can explain about what they can do and what difficulties that they're having. So this really, in a way, will be able to make the employer have that conversation with the employee, because they will be presented with a report which says what the employee can do, maybe some of the hours that need adjusting, but that will come through the GP from a trusted source, and so an employer can be confident about how he might need to actually consider putting that information into place.
And then from the employee's side of things, because, as you said, the information's coming through the GP and coming through occupational health, those two bodies are using the terminology and correctly describing things.
That's correct, yeah.
As an individual, I talk to my line manager and I don't use the words properly and they misunderstand.
That is a problem. Yeah. But one of the big things, now you're talking about it, it becomes really obvious, is that everybody who's involved in this process communicates. Very often an employer will receive a fit note which doesn't always give them enough information.
Right.
No. The employee doesn't necessarily talk to the GP in the same way that they talk to their employer.
Yeah.
But this way the GP, the employer, the occupational health will all be saying one thing and it will all come through as one report.
And are you aware, and obviously you probably have the same thing I do, so when we see an individual, there's the privacy issues, data protection issues, and therefore there are some instances where an individual might tell me something that I will be able to advise on but not declare onwards to somebody else. Within this scheme, where are the barriers?
I would imagine that they're going to have to set up very clear consents so that when the GP refers this person to the service, they will have to consent to have that.
Right.
There will be some dilemmas sometimes where a GP is unable to do that, and he will obviously have to try and sort that out with the employer and the employee if he can't access the service. Once occupational health service have actually seen the employee, because they've consented to be seen, they will then need to get consent from the employee to provide provide a report back to the GP, which they then will say will go on to the employer. Any report that goes back will need to be discussed with the employee so they're happy with the information and they're happy with its accuracy. But at no time does a diagnosis actually have to be disclosed. Sometimes it's useful, but if the employee doesn't want a diagnosis, because it can be very personal, to be disclosed, the occupational health practitioner is experienced enough to know how to give relevant information that's useful without having to give a diagnosis. And if an employer insists on having a diagnosis, then the occupational health need to discuss that with them to make them understand about medical confidentiality.
So the way I understand it's well, I think that's lots of times employees don't necessarily get up and go and speak to the employer for fear of being either discriminated against or feeling a failure because they can't cope or being in pain, etc., etc. So that's the most important step. And then from there, it's the employer that would then find help and support. So they can support each other and then get through it and everybody would be happy. But
that's right. And hopefully, once this service is well embedded and everybody is very comfortable and happy with it, it will become normal practice. So somebody will expect somebody to advise them from occupational health. But at the moment, it will take a little while to educate people, to make them feel confident. And sometimes there are issues around employee health, which really hasn't got anything to do with the health. There may be other issues, which we call barriers. And it's up to occupational health to try and determine what are those barriers. It could be relationships in the workplace. It's more about what's going on with their work colleagues. But it's a lot easier to say, I've got a back pain, and they may have back pain. But we do know that stress and back pain actually work with each other.
Absolutely.
So if you can deal with the stress issues, very often you can deal with the back pain as well. So it's about making people feel comfortable about being open and honest about what the real problems are, because otherwise you can't help them.
Right.
Yeah.
This might be something you can't answer because it's too soon. But obviously it's a government initiative. Governments do change.
Yes.
And therefore the scheme could potentially change, stop, whatever. Is there a projected lifespan for
projects? I haven't actually been given that information, but I do know that employee health, sickness absence costs associated with that have always been very high on the agenda for all governments.
Right.
So I would imagine that as long as everybody is happy that the government can generate more money through people being in work rather than paying actually for the scheme, then there won't be any reason as to why people wouldn't support it going forwards. But it's definitely something from my point of view that I see being in for a long term, not just a flash in the pan.
Excellent. And from the service provider's viewpoint, are there opportunities for people to get involved to help out and provide services as part of the scheme, or is that all signed up?
Well, I think at the moment the tender exercise is taking place, and we're just waiting to see who has actually been awarded those contracts. Right. But I think there is an element of seeing, well, what other local providers are around to be able to do maybe some of the face-to-face assessments. So until the big companies have been announced who've actually been awarded the tender, we won't necessarily know how anybody else can get involved. But all the other occupational health businesses and practitioners that I know, we're all keen to be part of this. We don't actually want to be sat outside of it.
Certainly.
We all feel that we need to be part of this process.
And so what are you monitoring to make sure you don't miss out on something?
I think we're all monitoring our occupational health press, really. And today I brought in an article as well that's come from Personnel magazine, because they're all very interested in it from an HR point of view.
That's Personnel Today.
Personnel Today. Yeah. So over the next 2 or 3 months, I think there will be a lot more information that will be available. And then we can see how other people can get involved and how it will affect us as a business. I provide occupational health advice to employers, and it may well be that some of the advice that comes back now through the GPs precludes my involvement.
Right.
But what I do know is that a lot of time the employer asks me to help interpret any information or advice that's been provided by a GP, a specialist or a physiotherapist, because I actually understand that particular employee's workplace. So for instance, if I'm working with somebody in the construction industry and the employee is working at heights, I can be the person maybe who can look at the adjustments in regards to alternative work, because I know what alternative work is available. So it will be all of us working together. But where there isn't an occupational health presence within a company, the employer will need to be clear as to how they will implement that. And hopefully it will be easy enough for them to do.
Excellent. So we're now going to hear our last segment today from Angela, down under in that lovely warm weather. And I think this time she's by the sea.
I had to come and take the ocean. I am standing in the ocean. Not to make any of you listeners jealous, of course, but here I am, Palm Beach. Oh, it's just delicious, that water. It's not the greatest warmth I've ever had of seawater. I'd say sometimes sunny Westgate can be just as nice. Deep breath. And I've now got my knees wet. Great fun is had by all, including me. Yes, I'm a child, as you know, listener. Having fun, Palm Beach. So I'm sitting down now after my escapade in the sea. Definitely a friend of mine called being by the sea, sitting by the sea, she called it ocean therapy. And she's not wrong. Just sitting here, listening to the waves. And there are some serious waves, listener, if I could tell you, if I could actually describe the height of them, then I would, but I can't. But they're seriously, seriously high. People out surfing. I'm not surfing, as you can probably gather. I don't know, maybe I should try surfing whilst trying to do Who Cares Wins Radio. That could be interesting. Maybe I'll have a chat with you, Jan. What do you think? Yes, further discussion perhaps. Reporting over and out from Palm Bay. Talk to you soon.
Well, I hope you could hear Angela above the waves and the hilarity going on there as we sit slightly chillier in the not so sunny Kent. The sun's dipping.
The sun's going in now,
I think. Dipping over the yardarm. There's another saying about yardarms, but we'll hold on for a few more minutes yet. So we're here, Who Cares Wins, on Monday, talking to Kim Boggins of KB Occupational Health Safety Services. We've been talking about the Work Assessment Advisory Service that's going to be starting. You've already given us a couple of information points that people can go to. So we mentioned the NHS Choices website.
Yes, that's
and
a
then
good site.
The helpline, which is 0800 077 8847. You've given
8844.
Sorry, pens to the ready, cross that out, 8844. Okay, so I'm going to read that again, 0800 077 8844. We'll post all of those on Facebook. We've also got a couple of other links for you. There's actually the Fitness for Work Government Response Report, if you want to read the background to the scheme and how it came about, and also a website from .gov.uk, government policies, if you want to read a bit more about that. And then across the months, hopefully, Kim, you'll keep us up to date with any links.
Yes, by all means.
People might want to listen to and know more about. Outside of the scheme, are there any services that you personally in your company offer that wouldn't fit neatly within the scheme?
I think the scheme itself is going to primarily be providing support around sickness absence, helping people stay and remain in work. Occupational health is a much broader discipline than that. And the sorts of services, for instance, that I will provide to a company include carrying out hearing tests, respiratory checks for people who may be exposed to welding fume, solder fume, any chemicals that they may actually inhale, doing skin checks on people to see whether or not there are any problems associated with their work activities. Also, people who use vibrating tools can develop a very specific problem called hand-on vibration syndrome. So I undertake regular questionnaires and checks to be able to help them ensure that they don't have any symptoms, and then advise people as to how they can manage any symptoms if they do occur. So broadly speaking, my work involves supporting employers in regards to sickness absence, carrying out those sorts of health checks, as well as training. One of the things that I do and I quite enjoy doing is training on the NIBOSH diploma course for health and safety professionals, so that they understand about occupational health, so that they can do their health risk assessments and looking at the health side as well as the safety side. So the training activity is something else that I get involved in.
Right. And you're based in Kent?
Yes.
Your clients further afield?
Yes, I mainly work within Kent, but I also work up into London. Mm-hmm. But because I provide services which are remote management of sickness absence, I do cover the whole country for remote management. So right. A lot of companies that have offices throughout the country of the UK, then I will deal with those employees, but obviously that's normally on the telephone.
Right. But you're off to Gatwick tomorrow.
Yes, I do actually. Yes, you just reminded me. Yeah, I work with Constructing Better Health,
right.
Which is providing advice and support to the employers around occupational health and how to set up occupational health schemes for their employees.
Right.
And they're based in Crawley, so I'm up there tomorrow to do my bit up for them.
Okay, watch planes go by. So if any listener wants to get in contact with you, either based on what we've been talking about today or your services as a company, how's the best way to do that?
Probably the best way is to contact us through our website. We do have a website contact email address, and our website is kb-ohs.co.uk, which I'm sure you'll probably be able to put up on Facebook.
We'll pop that on Facebook.
And if there are any employers who want to talk a little bit more about this scheme or anything to do with occupational health, then we'd be pleased for them to get in touch.
Excellent. Well, thank you ever so much for your time today, Kim. I'm sure questions will flood in over the coming days and weeks as people get to grips with this. So we'll keep you on your toes.
Okay, thank you very much.
As time comes by. We're going to have a quick bunch of events now from Hilda Marie.
Just very quickly, I'm going to repeat the Health at Work Advice Line telephone number. It's 0800 077 8844. I think that's a very good number for you to save in your little book there. We've got an important event on February the 7th. It's Ramp Up the Red. It's British Heart Foundation's Fight Heart Disease campaign. And you can listen to our show from week 41 to hear Kim Brophy from British Heart Foundation talk about this and other ways to support the British Heart Foundation.
Yeah, it's a brilliant event. Lots of things you can sign up to do. I think they've got runs and walks and all sorts of things for sponsorship, but also lots of health tips on the website. So well worth taking a look.
So 7th of February. We have got the acronym quiz.
Oh, yes. Pens
Number
and papers
three.
Ready.
It's PSHE. That's Papa Sierra Hotel Echo. So it's PSHE, and it's from Ben McGannon's at the Wellbeing Symposium, week 41 and show 37.
So if you've been listening each week, you should now have three acronyms so far. We will be posting them on Facebook on a monthly basis, so no point looking on a weekly basis. But as January 27th is the last of the month, we'll be posting it. Those three up in the next couple of days. And then when we finish the quiz, all of them will be listed, so you can then send in your entries. So don't answer anything yet. Keep your pens and pads to hand, and we'll let you know when and where to send those informations in. Next week's show, we're into February, 3rd of February already.
Wow.
It's going to be Tim Box from Headway Hypnotherapy. He's returning to us. We met Tim back in November, I think it was. Tune in next week to find out what Tim's been up to and to hear some of the fascinating courses and workshops he's going to be running in the future. Wish you all a brilliant week. Thank you very much again to Kim.
Thank you very much for having me.
And for Hilda Marie to keep keeping Angela's seat warm for her.
Thank you, Jan.
Not that she
it's
needs any
pleasure.
Extra warmth.
Exactly.
But thank you.
All that sunshine and all that.
Absolutely. Oh. We're not jealous, folks, honey. Have a lovely week, and we'll speak to you soon.
Have a lovely week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.